Welcome to episode 71 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. In December 2006, I visited Hokkaido, the northernmost island of Japan, to photograph the red crown cranes that I've shot a number of times in the past. From today, for the next 4 weeks, you're going to join me on my photographic adventures and share my experiences. Today, in addition to looking at a few photos, we're going to talk about what I was hoping to get from the trip, and then as we move through the series, we'll talk more about what I actually did get. And I'm going to finish today by talking about the Canon EOS 1DS Mark II camera that I rented for use on the trip, and just compare it a little to my 5D. Before we go on to the main topic for today though, note that we are currently being sponsored by top camera bag manufacturer Lowepro. Last week I mentioned that Lowepro have been making camera bags for over 30 years, and actually they've just turned 40, so congratulations to Lowepro on that. Over 40 years of firsts. If you didn't yet hear my review of the bags that I use and the details of the Stealth Reporter D650AW camera bag that you can win in the photography assignment, please listen to episode 70 of this podcast. There's still plenty of time to scoop this amazing prize. Also, before we move on, if you've been having trouble with lots of the episodes of this podcast being downloaded again a second time by iTunes, then please accept my apologies. I had to change the feed for the show to allow me to include decimal points in episode numbers. I released a promo for the camera bag prize as episode 70.1, so the change to the feed triggered iTunes to think that some of the shows were different and therefore should be downloaded again. You can stop iTunes from doing this, and in fact I'd prefer it if you did so, because I've spent most of the weekend hand-holding my servers as they crumple under the strain. If you want to change the iTunes settings, go into Edit and Preferences and then select the Podcast tab. You can choose to download all episodes, which is the default, or you can choose to only download the latest or to do nothing. I think that downloading the latest is the best setting, personally. That's what I usually select. Once you've stopped iTunes from downloading everything, you can actually then go through and delete all of the grayed out entries, and they'll stay deleted so you can just see your original files. Whatever you decide to do though, once again I apologize for the inconvenience caused in the changes to the feed. And with that though, let's move on to today's main topic. On the morning of Wednesday, December the 27th, I was up at the crack of dawn and heading to Haneda Airport to fly to Hokkaido, probably my favourite place on the planet. If you've been following this podcast for a while, you'll know that I head out to Hokkaido a few times a year. In 2006, I was there in February, July, and this recent trip in December. In the summer, it's a nice place to go to escape the heat of Tokyo, which can be quite oppressive. And in the winter, Hokkaido is usually locked in snow, which we don't see much of in Tokyo, so it's always nice to get up there. It's not just the weather, though, that attracts me to Hokkaido. It's a very mountainous place, making for beautiful landscape photography, and the wildlife is just amazing. On this trip, I was going to concentrate on shooting the red crown cranes in a small town called Tsurui. Tsurui actually means, directly translated, cranes are here. Tsurui is just a 40 minutes or so drive from the Kushiro Airport, which is where I was heading. I arrived and picked up my rental car before lunch and was a little disappointed to see that it was raining, not snowing. The ice on the roads was very slippery because it was wet, but the rain had not yet managed to melt it, making driving a little bit treacherous, so I took my time and making my way over to Tsurui. When I got there, the first place I drove to was the Ito Crane Sanctuary, and when I got there, I was pleased to see a whole lot of cranes just standing around on the grass. But to be honest, it was dark. It was just before lunch, but it was dark and wet, and not really the best of conditions. I decided to go to the hotel and drop some stuff off and then get a map of the area and scout out the other locations that I was hoping to shoot at over the next few days. I'd be here until 2 p.m. on the 30th, so hopefully I was going to get better conditions to shoot in, so I wasn't too worried about getting my gear out and seeing what I could make out of the conditions on the first day. So I did just that. I went to the hotel and checked in. The hotel was suggested to me by Yoshieki Kobayashi, the Japanese photographer that I visited Hokkaido with a few times already. It is the Hotel Taito, and I can fully recommend this hotel if you're ever in town. The owner of the hotel is also a professional photographer named Masahiro Wada. I'll put a link to the hotel's homepage in the show notes, but there's only Japanese on the site. I can't find an English version. But there's also a lot of the photographer, the owner's photos on there in a gallery, and most of it's, you can navigate by the icons. So have a click around and see if you can find his photos. Some very nice work on there. So also I'll put a link to another page that is really cool to play with. There's actually a webcam at the Crane Sanctuary, so you can see the birds in the field live between 6 a.m. and 5 p.m. Japan time, that is. So Japan is currently, well, always 9 hours ahead of GMT. So you'll have to figure out when to look at this webcam based on your own time zone. But once you hit a time when the camera is working, you can click a little button on the bottom right of the webcam window to actually take control of the camera yourself if no one else has control, and then it will allow you to zoom in and out and pan around the field looking at the Red Crown cranes doing their thing. So now, equipped with a map and the best places to shoot the cranes from, I went back out and had a drive around doing a bit of reconnaissance. There were three types of photographs that I was really hoping to shoot while out here for these 3 days. One of them was from a bridge looking out down onto the cranes in the river where they roost on cold nights. I was hoping to shoot the scene with the mist on the river enshrouding the birds as they started their day. I was starting to get a little bit of a bad feeling about this shot though, as the river only gets misty when the temperature falls down to about minus 15 degrees Celsius, which I believe is around 5 degrees Fahrenheit. Of course, it's much colder in the mornings, but usually on days when I get to, when it gets this cold in the morning, it doesn't normally get above freezing during the day either. So I was not so hopeful that it was that cold in the mornings at this point, at this time of the year. Still, there was a few days and I was still hoping that maybe in the coming days it would cool down a little bit. The place to shoot these cranes from is called Otowa Bashi, which is about 10 kilometers from the hotel. And actually, Otowa is the name of the name of the bridge. Bashi just means, it's just like the concatenated form of Hashi, which means bridge. The characters for Otowa, actually, as well, are the characters for sound and wings. So I thought that was a pretty beautiful name for the bridge, especially given the fact that the Red Crown cranes roost here. The bridge is actually built with one bridge for cars and one for people, so there's no fear of being run over while photographing the cranes. You have a bridge pretty much built for this purpose. I found this place and quickly checked it out, but then drove around to a few other places on the map, none of which had any cranes at this time, but at least now I knew where they were. Or where they would be. It turns out that I pretty much spent the next 3 mornings visiting Otowa Bridge at around 6 a.m. before dawn, and then driving straight to the crane sanctuary after that, either finding no cranes at the bridge or after shooting for a little while, but we'll get to those shots in a later episode. The two other shots that I was hoping to capture while I was here on this particular trip was cranes crying, or honking, or whatever it is you want to call it that cranes do. But while doing that beautiful dance that they do, sort of crying with the freezing breath coming out of their mouths, and that being lit by the early morning light. I have a few shots from previous visits with the breast showing already, but I really wanted this in that golden early morning light that I know you can get in these areas if you're there early enough. Again, it has to be pretty cold for this, I was not that hopeful that I was going to get this shot either. The last shot that I was pretty much going to be able to get no matter what is one of the cranes flying as it gets dark, so that I had a slow shutter speed to capture the movement in their wings. I could have shot this during the day with a neutral density filter, obviously, and maybe a small aperture to get a slow shutter speed, but this was not what I was visualizing. I wanted a dark background for the white birds to stand out on. Also, the birds fly to roost as it gets dark, so it would give me more chance, more birds to aim at, to actually, you know, get more opportunities to take the shot as it started to get dark. I called in at a small store in Surrey and bought some apples, plastic bottled drinks and bread, things that I was going to eat for lunch over the next 3 days while standing out on the sanctuary, and then I went back over to the sanctuary itself to see what I could make of this rainy afternoon. Well, it was really pretty uneventful. I shot for a while, but the conditions were not great. It didn't really enable anything great to happen. One shot that I wanted to look at from this afternoon is number 1200. Here you can see the sheer number of the cranes that take off together to go to roost. I recall thinking on seeing this that it was going to be difficult actually to even just single out one or two birds for my panning shots as it got dark. And this was the case to a certain extent. I got some pretty interesting results which we'll look at next week. Maybe the week after. I haven't planned for these for the future episodes of this travelogue yet. But on this day, I really didn't manage to produce anything notable. I'm really just showing you this shot, this first shot, which I kind of like, but don't think it's great, just to show you really the lay of the land at the sanctuary. I found this location to be much more scenic than the Akan International Crane Centre, and that's a few miles away. The Akan Centre actually seems to be more popular, probably because they feed the cranes raw fish at 2 p.m. every day, and get Stella and white-tailed eagles come in for a free lunch too. There is more space to stand at to shoot from there too, but because it's much more popular, it can sometimes be difficult to even just get somewhere to stand your tripod. So at the sanctuary, I pretty much was able to pick where I shot from each day. You can see that there's a nice tree there in the foreground and adding a little interest, but the surroundings look very natural. The Akan Centre's nice too, but not quite as scenic as this. You can see from the shooting data, if you're viewing this shot on my website, that it was so dark that even having set my ISO to 400 and the aperture to 5.6, I was still only getting a shutter speed of 1/80th of a second. This would have been great for the panning shots, but it was going to be difficult to do this in the rain while holding a brolly in one hand. I was using the 5D at this point, so I couldn't really get it wet. So I pretty much gave up on the first day. If you listened to the podcast for a while, then you'll know that I quite like rainy days for some shooting in some situations. So it's not something that usually bothers me, but it just wasn't really going to work for what I wanted to do with the cranes today. I went back to the hotel and cleared up a few of the jobs that we have to do, like backing up the photos that I did take to my Epson portable storage, and then charging batteries and things, and then just went for dinner. Great food at the Hotel Taito too, but I never really enjoy eating alone. I went on the trip alone, so sort of sat there and just had a beer and something to eat. After dinner, I went up to the loft where the owner of the hotel sits most evenings and introduced myself and got some more tips on photographing in the area during this conversation. I find it so important to talk to people that shoot in the area whenever possible. They know where to go at various times of year, and if they're shooting all year round regularly, they'll know how the conditions have been over the last few days as well. I told him what sort of shots that I was hoping to capture, and he seemed somewhat hopeful that I'd get at least one morning with the mist over the river, so I went to bed happy that night. The next morning I was up bright and early at 5:15 a.m. and headed for the bridge. I've been told that the cranes roosted way down the river from the bridge, and that even with my 600mm lens they'd seem far away. This of course meant that they could not be seen with the naked eye, and as it was still pretty dark at this time I couldn't tell if there was any birds on the river at all. I was putting my gear down, so, you know, getting my rucksack off, and started to think about getting the 100 to 400mm lens out and put it onto the 5D to take a look for the birds, when a guy with a pair of binoculars walked along the bridge and told me that there were no birds there. So it was pointless staying here for the possibility of a nice landscape shot too. I wasn't really here for landscapes. There was no mist on the river, which was again one of the things that I was looking for. So I jumped back in the car and went straight around to the Itor Crane Sanctuary and shot for an hour or so until I headed back to the hotel for breakfast. One of the last shots that I captured during this hour or so at the sanctuary before breakfast was 1202. Shot at ISO 200 at f5.6 for 1/250th of a second. I was really just trying to get, just capture the atmosphere of the morning with the sun as it climbed in the sky and the golden light caught in the clouds. The foreground's a tad on the dark side as I was exposing for the sky, but not to the extent where I thought I needed to take two shots and merge them together or use a graduated neutral density filter, which I didn't have because I don't do that anymore. It would work okay like this, and I'm not too disappointed with it. I think the foreground being dark actually puts things into a little bit more perspective. I kind of like the way, you know, the birds are just sort of tinkering around here in the foreground. I have bumped up the saturation on this a little, as I do with most of my shots these days, to give them a bit of a velvier look, and this really brought out the warmth in the sky. It was actually still too warm temperature-wise in general, so this marked the end of my hopes for getting the shot with the freezing breath pluming out of the mouth for today. After breakfast, I had a drive around at some of the other, take a look at some of the other sites in the area to see if there were any cranes around, but there weren't, so I went back to the sanctuary, and this was the time, I was here now for the day. I had brought my lunch to the point where I was going to be shooting, where I was going to stand to shoot for the rest of the day. I think it was about 10 a.m. when I got there. And I was going to try my best to not go to the toilet and just shoot literally for 6 hours solid until the sun went down after 4 p.m.-ish. There are toilets here, but although Japan is a safe country, I didn't fancy leaving my gear out on the snow at the edge of the fence while I went to the toilet. And as that's actually as most of the other people do that. I also got to know the guy standing next to me, and we had lots of conversations over the next 3 days or so. He was going to be there until the day after me, the 31st, he was going back. But I could have asked him to keep his eye on my gear while I went away, but it turns out that I didn't need to anyway. After I'd been here for an hour or so, at 11 a.m, I shot the next photo, which is number 1203. I had, of course, shot a lot of other photos already, but this is just the first one that I want to look at. This crane was standing literally just a few meters away from me, so I picked up my 5D, to which I'd fitted the 100 to 400mm lens, and made a few exposures of this beautiful bird preening itself. Shot at ISO 100 with aperture 5.6 for 1/400th of a second. If you look at the EXIF data below the image in my gallery, you'll see that I was shooting in manual mode. I've been through this a few times before, but just to recap, as these birds are white and are often against a white background, I usually take a reading from either them or from the snow, and then set my camera to manual and just select a shutter speed based on the aperture that will give me 1 2/3 of a stop more than the camera's meter thinks that it should be. This way I get the whites exposed correctly, but more importantly, as these guys take off and move from a white background to a dark or a mid-tone background, the camera doesn't get confused because it's in manual mode. So if I don't do this, then the dark background would make the camera overexpose and, you know, trying to lighten up the scene. And that would result in the booming totally blown out, losing all details in the white feathers. So once I know that I've got my whites white, I really don't need to worry about anything else. Anyway, back to the shot. I really like this one just for the tenderness of the moment, and the diffused light reflected from all of the white around is lighting the crane's eyes up enough to be able to see the pupil and some detail in the eye without there being a catchlight as such. As I say, this was shot with the 100 to 400 millimeter lens on my 5D, but a few minutes later the bird was still there, so I shot it again as an even closer close-up with the 600 millimeter f4 on the 1DS Mark II that I'd rented for the trip. We can see the results in image number 1204, shot at exactly the same settings as the 5D. I did notice that the 1DS's meter was pretty much always a third of a stop lighter than the 5D when I pointed it at the same thing, which I kept in mind while shooting, but most of the time, once I had my reading for the lighting conditions at any one point, I just kept setting the two cameras to the same settings and then tweaking as necessary based on looking at the histogram. These birds being white makes it very easy to just set exposure to get the histogram close to but not touching the right shoulder of the histogram. Artistically, not even close to the last image, but I just find that the detail in the bird's head and the beak is pretty unbelievable. You know, this is more down to the lens than the body. Although I do or did have more pixels with the 1DS at 16.6 megapixels compared to 12.8 megapixels with the 5D. But of course, you know, both will enable me to get very large prints, so it's debatable whether 16.6 megapixels is really necessary. Now, I personally like to have as many pixels as I possibly can to play with. The reason is that you never know how large you're going to want to print an image in the future, and having larger images opens up more doors when selling images commercially as well. Also, if you have a large image to start with, then it gives you more freedom when cropping a little. You can crop a little bit more away and still have enough to play with, much more than you could if you had a smaller image. Of course, all of this is relative to what size you want to print to, so it really is very subjective. Anyway, kind of easing into a mini review of the 1DS Mark II here, the first thing that I like about the camera is, as I just said, lots of pixels to play with. The reason I rented this camera for the trip was really so that I could just ignore the fact that it was either raining or snowing. I often have to babysit the camera a little bit too much when it's snowing or raining heavily when I'm using my 5D. The 5D is okay in light snow, and also, I mean, I don't always cover it up in very light rain. But as soon as the weather turns bad, it's better to keep the body covered. All of my L lenses are by default weatherproof, and so don't need to be handled with kid gloves in this way. Of course, you have to stop raindrops or snow from melting on the front element or filters of your lens, but the barrel itself can get pretty much as wet as you like, and you don't really have to worry about it doing any harm. Note that I am talking about L lenses here. Please don't go out and get a standard lens all wet and then complain to me when it breaks. I'm only talking about L lenses. The other reason that I rented the 1DS for this trip was because I don't imagine that it's going to be too long now before we see a 1DS Mark III or a Mark IIN or an X or whatever they want to call the next generation. But I wanted to gauge what Canon needs to fix in the next model of this top of the range pro body to put myself in a better position to decide if it's worth buying or not. Comparing it to the 5D, I have to admit that the short review would simply be that I'm glad that I didn't pay more than double the cost of the 5D for the 1DS. If you can put up with babysitting the 5D a little, then it really doesn't seem worth the additional cost as it stands. That wouldn't really be much of a good review. You know, it wouldn't be a very good review at all, though. So, even a mini review. So let's go into a little bit more detail before we close for today. So in addition to more pixels and weatherproofing, the other things that I did like about the 1DS Mark II was, to start with, the neutrally coloured finder. I've never noticed with the 5D before, but when using the two cameras side by side, the 5D has a definite yellow tint. This doesn't really make any difference in the handling of the camera, but it was very obvious and a little bit annoying the more I noticed it. Another thing that I like about the 1DS is the fact that the rubber eyepiece or the eye cup on the, you know, on the back of the finder is attached with clips to stop it from falling off. I've lost the eye cup from my 20D once, and I've dropped it from the 20D and other cameras a number of times, and only lost it once, usually going back and finding it. But, you know, it seems that the only the 1D series, the professional bodies, have eye cups that are locked on in this way, which is a bit of a shame, but that's how Canon have decided to do it. Also, related to the finder, there's a little shutter built into the back of the 1DS finder. It's like there's a tiny lever on the right side that, when pulled down, or outwards, closes the back of the finder. So, you know, why would you want to close the back of a finder, you might ask? But basically, when shooting on a tripod with a timer or long exposures, when you remove your eye from the back of the finder, a light can stray into the finder and make its way down to the sensor via the mirrors that enable us to see the scene through the lens when composing the shot. In fact, if you do this when you are composing the shot, it can also affect the metering as well. So I would imagine that, you know, you would need to shut this before making all of your final choices. But if you're in manual mode, really the only thing you need to worry about is just pulling this lever. A little shutter stops any light from getting in the back, and you can just sort of expose away. Of course, the other thing about the 1DS Mark II that I really liked was just the overall quality of the camera. It feels great to hold. It's rock solid. You could literally do just about anything to this camera, and I'm sure that you're not going to hurt it. You can really tell that apart from the weatherproofing, it's just really, really built to last. So if I think of anything else that I did like about the 1DS, I'll tell you as we move along. But for now, I think that's about it. So I'll tell you the things that I did not like about it as well. Two things that really got me are the autofocus and the image buffer. Now, this camera is not really meant for speed and shooting lots of images in a row. If I really wanted fast frames per second and the ability to just keep shooting without worrying about filling the buffer, then I should have gone for the 1D Mark IIN and not the 1DS Mark II. Compared to the 1D Mark IIN at 20 raw images in a burst, the 1DS Mark II will only shoot 11 raw images before the buffer fills up, that is. Now, if the camera wrote these images to the card as they're shot, and, you know, while I was continuing to shoot, then even 11 images would probably be enough most of the time. But I got the distinct feeling that clearing the buffer to the card was paused while I was half pressing the shutter button, waiting for the next shot. I didn't really test this, which I really regret, but a number of times I got down to the last shot or so, you know, with a 1 or a 0 in the finder indicating the number of shots left, and kept the shutter button half pressed, tracking a crane across the sky while waiting for the number to go up again, and it didn't go up. It stayed at 1 or 0 until I took my finger off the shutter button. I haven't checked if this is design or a faulty camera, that I just happened to have, but I suspect it's the design of the camera, and it was very frustrating. The other point, the other thing that I found even more frustrating was the autofocus. Despite the 1DS Mark II having 45-point focusing, I found it to be far more prone to mistakes than the 5D under these circumstances. Now, it's important to stress that I was in a place where the white bird, large white bird, splashes of black, was probably less contrasty than the mottled snow and the you know, with the patches of grass poking through and the twigs and branches of the trees in the background. But I found that the 1DS almost always focused on the wrong thing, again and again. You know, in the circumstances were confusing. And as I did become accustomed to it myself and sort of the positioning of the 45 focusing points, it did get a little bit better. But even over the, you know, for the 4 days, it really wasn't a lot, and it was really quite frustrating to the end. I know that I lost quite a few shots from the camera moving out of focus to the surroundings at the last minute. A little bit, the annoyingness was reduced a little bit if I selected the center focusing point, or any other single point. But I really wanted to test the 45 focusing points, and it just wasn't really up to the job. Under the same conditions, the 5D got it right almost all of the time. So this was it's obvious in both. This issue is obvious in both standard autofocus and AI servo, which I often use when tracking birds in flight. And it was the fact that I was trying to track a bird that I didn't always want to put in the very center of the screen, that I didn't really want to just single down the focus point to just one point. So I guess this is what you get when the camera is under development for another year or so. Canon has obviously made bounds in the accuracy and probably the algorithms in their autofocus in the time between the two cameras were released. Now, I have to say that even under normal circumstances, focusing is almost definitely going to be better with the 1DS because of the number of focusing points. But the surroundings that I was shooting in really just seemed to have it stumped. So these are the only two things that really, really annoyed me about the 1DS Mark II, that is. The small LCD compared to the 5D was a little bit annoying, but I'm used to that from my old Canon DSLRs. Also, the time taken to delete photos from the card was really, really long. But these are not that annoying compared to the first two issues, which really just clearly outweigh a lot of the nice things that I did like about this camera. So when the next generation of this camera is released, I'll be paying close attention to the areas that I've just mentioned and see how they've been improved before considering turning over a large chunk of my bank balance to my friends at Canon. So looking at the software that I'm using to record this podcast, I can see that we're over 33 minutes. I'm going to continue for a few weeks. Let's call it a day for today. Last week, I mentioned that I might be able to meet up with listeners in the UK during a visit back there next week. I now know that this will be the 24th of January, which is a Wednesday. Unfortunately, my weekends are fully booked, so this is really all I can make. I will make my way somewhere between Nottingham and London, some point in the middle, hopefully, for the afternoon and or an evening, if anyone is interested to meet up for a chat and maybe for dinner in the evening, so that we can get to know each other a little bit better face-to-face. If you're interested, please mail me at info@martinbaileyphotography.com over the next week. Let me know somewhere that would be relatively easy for you to get between Nottingham and London, and if we can figure out a good place for us to meet up, then it will be great to see you. For now, though, have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.
photocastnetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. photocastnetwork.com